it's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate, and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
I am the real CEO of the Philadelphia Housing Authority.
I'm Dubs, and I'm with Philadelphia Housing Action.
So just tell us about the group and how it got started.
Started probably with me. I just had an issue with the Housing Authority's private police force at my privately owned residence, and they had vehicles that looked like exactly like the regular Philadelphia police, so I didn't realize who they were, and I was trying to file complaints, and I was being told that there were no police at my house, but there were police at my house. So after I learned that they were Housing Authority police, I kind of went on this mission to try to get their police force disbanded, and I had demands around like them having distinctively marked vehicles and uniforms and stuff like that immediately. And I started going to their board meetings and city officials. And it was always just like PHA is like the mafia or something. And nobody would like address the issue. And the PHA police continued to like harass my family. So I started just disrupting everything that they did, everything that anybody in the city did, any politician, all their well-planned events for years. And I went to like all the PHA board meetings until I got banned. But through that process, I started to see how they threw the money around in the meetings and the policies they were creating and how they were selling off all the public housing. So the police demands evolved into the housing kind of stuff and demanding that they stop the auctions and stop selling the public housing and maintain their housing stock and take care of the properties and stuff like that. And then it all boiled over, spring of 19, I just decided to occupy the Housing Authority's brand new $45 million headquarters with my friend Fredo. And that's where we kind of all met each other, right? I guess. And we stayed there for 5 months and did a lot of actions and stuff like that. That did get the Housing Authority police to change their vehicles. They never gave us credit for it. They said they just woke up and realized they looked too much like the Philadelphia police, but through that, that was kind of like where we met and started working together. And then after that, over the winter, we were still kind of coming after the Housing Authority and the Office of Homeless Services and city officials. And then I guess this year, the city started evicting a lot of encampments. And we were going and like disrupting them and pushing, just like being disruptive, I guess. And you want to pick up with anything?
Yeah, so, yeah, I met Jen last year at Occupy PHA at that encampment protest she was doing. And I was, like, really happy for it because I, like, back in 2003, I was, like, a squatter in, like, vacant Housing Authority property and was, like, violently evicted without a court process by their, like, Housing Authority police and that kind of stuff. And have always kind of had a grudge against the Housing Authority since that day. And like, just to give like a little bit of context, in Philadelphia, like the Housing Authority here, like owns like vast numbers of vacant property that they keep vacant. And it's sort of like one of the things Jen was like really getting at is like, it's a way that the Housing Authority like helps to like aid and abet like the historic like redlining of these like mostly black neighborhoods in Philly, but also like fast forward to today is like a way that they really help the way that gentrification will play out by like auctioning off these properties they've kept deliberately vacant for a number of years and, like, blighted the neighborhood and lowered the property values, and now they're selling them to, like, developers that do student housing for the Temple campus or just, like, market-rate luxury housing or whatever. So I was, like, pretty excited to, like, connect with Jen and find someone else who, like, had a grudge against the Housing Authority last year. And then, like Jen was saying, this year we kind of, like, broadened a little bit and, like, started working with some more people around these, like, homeless encampment evictions. And over the winter, I think, like, I don't know, I'd say we were, like, talking about housing takeovers even last year.
Yeah.
And, like, had this kind of idea, but it was just, like, a little bit, like, more than we had capacity for at the time because we were doing all this other. But then I think, like, the turn of the year, like, Monster Housing did that, like, occupation in Oakland, and we noticed that. And then we were talking about it with some of the, like, newer folks we were working with that we started meeting at these, like, contested, like, encampment evictions and going to these meetings that homeless services were doing and that kind of stuff. And, like, we're talking about it a lot more. And then, like, L.A. did their thing. They took some houses. And then by the time COVID rolled through and there was, like, a lockdown happening, like, that same day that we had a shelter-in-place order here in Philly, they were evicting, like, one of the biggest homeless encampments in downtown. And it was, like, a big, like, planned eviction for many months. It was at the convention center. The convention center had, like, given $500,000 to homeless services, basically, to kick these people out. And it was also the day after the CDC had issued their guidelines saying that you shouldn't evict homeless encampments during the pandemic. So, like, that same morning that the, like, shelter-in-place order went in, they evicted this huge encampment, and we contested it and, like, disrupted it and confronted, like, the homeless services, like, bigwigs with the CDC guidelines, and they were just like, yeah, whatever, we don't care. They did it anyways. They, like, stuck a bunch of homeless people into, like, the same car and, like, drove them off to shelters, and, like, we found out later, like, people died from COVID in those shelters that they got brought to and that kind of shit. But, like, we were so just pissed off at the end of that day that we just, like, went and did it and, like, went and started opening houses and moving people in, like, later that afternoon.
Well, I wanted to ask a little bit about just the situation in Philadelphia in terms of housing, and by that extension, how gentrification, houselessness, displacement all feeds into this context. If you could just tell us a little bit for those that are outside of Philadelphia and don't really know anything about the city. And also if you can speak to, and we'll talk about this a little later as well, but how the current pandemic and the economic crisis has impacted that reality of what housing is like in terms of the you all are organizing around.
Yeah, Philadelphia is like the poorest big city in America, supposedly. We have a, like, relatively high poverty rate. Like, in a lot of the neighborhoods here in Philly, like, a family of four, according to the census, is making, like, $19,500 or something. I think, like, more than a quarter of the city is, like, officially below the poverty line. Our city's also, like, majority black. The city, like, lost a lot of population back in the 70s. And only just kind of started recovering recently. We were, like, pretty behind the curve of, like, redevelopment and gentrification that a lot of, like, other big cities saw, like, probably starting in the 90s and early 2000s. I'd say, like, when the housing crisis hit, the 2008, like, financial crisis hit, like, I don't think development really, like, slowed down in Philly, actually. Like, I think it kind of picked up because, like, developers were fleeing other markets in the area that were, like, higher prices. So, like, Philly's kind of going through a gentrification boom. Like, our like, prices are sort of, like, lower than a lot of surrounding markets. So it's, like, attracting a lot of capital. We also give, like, a really, like, generous 10-year tax abatement to developers. And then what's happening is, like, what's happening everywhere, though. It's just the same. It's just, like, housing prices are, like, getting way, way higher. All the new shit being built is, like, that's market rate is all, like, high-end luxury housing.
and then like our like city government agencies that are supposed to be like helping out like low income folks are like busy selling everything the fuck off. You want to talk about that part at all?
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of the big thing is that in like North and West Philly, which are kind of like lower income, historically black neighborhoods, the housing authority has a really high concentration of housing stock. So we were just in this thing for the study that the housing authority has to do as part of our agreement on the impact of their sales. And they said that 80% of their housing stock is concentrated in like an area basically between like 7th and 33rd Street between, what did he say? Gerard and Lehigh. So that's like the middle of Temple University campus. And so the housing authority has kind of been used to like intentionally displace people from their neighborhoods and then sell those houses off to private developers at the auction. So that's kind of has an impact on not only the public housing residents, but people who rent in the area, people who are homeowners in the area, because then they get sold off and then they demolish them and then they build student housing or luxury condos and then everybody's cost of living goes up. And now it's like basically really at a really bad point where like you either have to be able to get public housing or you have to be like damn near rich to be able to afford to live in Philly. And then when they're selling off the houses, they're like transferring the assistance to like programs. So the public housing voucher for the 5-bedroom house is now like a project-based rental voucher and like a nonprofit that is basically like a prison institution that only serves like people with some kind of issue or whatever. And then those family homes are like gone. So there's like nowhere left for families to live. Like everything is being broken down into apartments and it's just really hard. There's really no housing available, and the waiting list for the public housing that is left and hasn't been sold yet still has 43,000 people on it, even though it's been closed to applicants since 2010.
Yeah, I just want to throw in one other thing that our housing authority like did here in this kind of like area we're talking about of North Philadelphia is like they enacted like a large eminent domain action in 2015 and stole, what is it? How many properties?
1,330.
1,300 properties in like a black neighborhood from like, you know, black people, like historically owned, like multi-generationally owned, like low income black residents, like had their homes eminent domain just like 5 years ago. And the housing authority like built its new headquarters in that area. And they're like building all this new stuff in that area that was like blighted by them, by their own like housing project that they like ran into the ground and like lowered all the property values and around it for decades before doing this action. So like the housing authority of like in Philly has just been like this kind of like major player in terms of like seizing property, like affecting property values, affecting rents, affecting like policing in this like hood basically in North Philly. So that's like kind of one of the reasons why it was like our major target, apart from it just being sort of like seemingly obvious to like try to take publicly owned property and like put people in it if it's sitting empty.
So in the timeline that it's going to be posted, it's going down by the time people listen to this, we of course encourage you to read it and we'll link it in the show notes. But you all write, in 2019, Occupy Philadelphia had an encampment in front of the Housing Authority, which lasted over 120 days. Focusing on these issues that laid out a lot of the groundwork for what was to come. So talk about that period in 2019. That's almost sounds strange to say that was so long ago now, but talk about that encampment and why it was important.
That encampment was basically myself and my friend Fredo started it. I was just, there had been an issue where my house was firebombed and, I had wanted to occupy the housing authority for a while, but my family was telling me not to. But since the thing happened with my house, they couldn't really stop me anymore. And I was just really upset that they built a $45 million headquarters on land that they seized from like black homeowners and businesses in my neighborhood. And just in the middle of like a poor residential neighborhood. They just built this giant 5-story glass pristine tower, and it was really infuriating to watch. And so one night I just asked my friend Fredo if he wanted to go occupy PHA with me, and he was like, yeah. And so we went. So it really didn't even start as an encampment. It started with me and Fredo in a crib mattress and a sign, one sign. And we just went and put the mattress at the door and stayed there, and we just didn't leave. And after like a few days, I was posting like on social media, so more people were coming. We had like a list of demands about, some of the demands evolved over to this summer's thing, like the moratorium on land sales and the disbanding the PHA police force and stuff like that. But the last year's demand was a moratorium on land sales and to stop the auctions and to place families in the public housing units. But then, we kind of learned more about the RAD program and that the houses that were being sold were no longer public housing, and the housing authority had to dispose of them. So that's kind of where we started demanding the properties be transferred into a land trust to stop them from being sold off to private developers. But we stayed out there for 5 months. There were a lot of incidents. We were hit with a bulldozer one time. They started building like gates on all the vacant lots in the area, and we tried to like block that, and there was a big fight with the PHA police, and two people got beat down and arrested by the PHA police, and then they decided to evict us from their front door one day, and they brought like counterterrorism and SWAT, like 60 cops, and there's only like 13 of us there at the time, but we just moved across the street and like reset up, and they couldn't do anything. And so we were just kind of there, just doing actions, going to the CEO's house a lot, having a lot of signs, having like a table for people to come up to that were like coming out of PHA and angry because PHA was like doing crooked things to them. We were, I guess it's important to note that like this headquarters, like we kind of said earlier, is on land that was seized to eminent domain, and it's in the middle of a neighborhood, so it's not like a lot of occupations like are in like the center of a town. Like we were in the middle of the hood where they had seized people's houses, where they like intentionally blight all their housing stock, where a lot of people are dependent on them and being oppressed by their policies. So we had a lot of support, and it was really different than occupations I have been in that were like in the center city area, because it was like right in the middle of where people are affected. So there were always just a lot of people coming and going and stopping to tell their stories, stopping to join in. Some people would stop just because they were hungry and we had food out there or whatever. But it was a pretty good experience. It brought not a lot of attention because it was kind of ignored. There were like 2 news articles about them, and those articles really talked more about the housing authority than they did about the occupation and why we were there. But it really was kind of like the big stepping block, I guess, to like where we all met each other at and kind of led to the things that are, you know, happening now.
Yeah, I'd echo that. Like, I think the most important like gain out of that occupation was just like the networks that got made, because there was like a lot of neighborhood connections, a lot of like North Philly connections, a lot of connections with people who were already squatting PHA. We met a lot of like PHA tenants who were telling us the stories of all the crazy shit that was happening to them, like in the stuff they were suffering at the hands of like PHA workers and maintenance people and all this kind of stuff. And, like, we just could see a lot of the like players who were coming in out of the headquarters making their backroom deals and this kind of stuff. So,
and I ran a troll campaign against the council president from the occupation.
I wanted to ask how the COVID-19 pandemic has, what role did that play? Did that push you all into taking back some of these vacant homes that were in your area? Or what was that context?
We kind of wanted to take over vacant homes even before the pandemic. I was keeping a list. So I have like a list of over 400 vacant PHA properties that I had just been like compiling and maintaining over the years. But I think the pandemic kind of pushed some of the families and individuals that did end up moving into the houses because, like, the shelter system had to, like, cut capacity because of the pandemic, and people didn't feel, like, safe in those group living situations anymore, and were more, like, willing to kind of take a risk of, like, squatting a house, I guess.
Yeah, I'd say, like, at least on my experience of it, like, the other thing the pandemic really did was just make it really easy to, like, talk to the neighbors at these locations where we were opening houses. Like, people would poke their head out and be like, "What are you doing?" And I'd just be like, "Oh, we're just surveying vacant city-owned property for emergency housing." And people were like, "Oh, cool." And, like, not ask any more questions than that. It was sort of just, like, people were in that mindset back, I don't know, like, it does feel like a long time ago, but, like, at the beginning of the pandemic, everyone was like, "Oh, shit, everything has to change." Like, all of a sudden, we all have to stay inside and do everything differently and, like, learn all this new stuff about how to, like, behave and, like, interact and stuff. So there was this sort of, like, public health coup that, like, went down for a little while, and people were, like, kind of a lot more receptive to, like, "Oh, yeah, of course you're looking at this vacant building that's been sitting empty next to me, like, since I've lived here for, like, moving people in because of the pandemic or whatever." So it did, like, make that a lot smoother in the earlier part of the year.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk about the process in which you're getting into these homes and, like, getting people inside of them for housing. What was that like, getting into and occupy the homes? And how did you get around issues like repairs or turning utilities on? I mean, however much detail you want to go into. I'm just curious, you know, that process, like, of just working with families that needed housing and getting them into those homes.
A lot of the houses were, like, already, like, broken into before we ever got there. So, like, a lot of the time, like, we didn't need to do a whole lot to, like, get into the building. But we did, like, because we were, like, mostly focusing on, like, families. Like, our first house wasn't families. Like, and that one kind of, like, got crazy really fast. And they did get evicted after a little while. Because they were just, like, flipping out and fighting each other on the street and that kind of stuff, and, like, threatening the neighbors. But after that, it was basically just families the whole time, and, like, we had to find houses that were in like, really good condition. And I think that's, like, the answer to your question about how do we get around, like, repairs and this kind of stuff. Like, a lot of these houses that we chose to occupy were in really good condition, like, didn't need a whole lot. A lot of times it was just, like, just turning the main circuit breaker on and the power was working, or, like, hooking the water line. A lot of times, like, the main thing that, like, would be missing would be, like, someone would come in and, like, scrap all the copper pipes out the basement or something like that. So we'd just have to, like, hook the water lines back up to be able to get that all working. And then, like, you know, maybe, like, mess with the toilet or mess with the spigot or whatever. But it was all, like, pretty minor, like, easy and cheap kind of stuff to fix. And, like, a lot of the houses were in really good condition, and we actually, like, were able to, like, move families in there that were, like, having issues with the city in other ways. Like, Philadelphia is, like, one of the, like, highest, like, rates of, like, taking people's children away from them in the country. And, like, they do that specifically if you don't have housing here too. Like, probably more than 80% of the cases of, like, people having their kids taken is because they just don't have housing. But they, like, they come and they check your house if you're trying to get your kids back. And, like, we were able to, like, pass those inspections. Like, city workers would be coming to these places that were squats and they just wouldn't know. And they'd come in there and they'd be like, "Oh yeah, it looks great. Like, this is cool. Like, okay, yeah, let's get you your kids back," that kind of stuff. So it wasn't, like, really, like, that much to, like, figure out how to get all these places up to snuff, just because we chose really good ones. Like, I think later in the year, we started, like, moving on houses that were, like, more problematic, that would have, like, some kind of, like, major, like plumbing stack replacement, that kind of stuff to do, just because we were, like, on a timeline to get people into places. But, For most of the year, and even, like, considering all that stuff, like, these houses were in really good shape. And I was sort of, like, the whole point of, like, why we were targeting them is, like, we knew the housing authority had a lot of good houses
just sitting empty that they were keeping empty, and that was like sort of the whole reason we were protesting them and like demanding that they get handed over for immediate housing.
So in the wake of the George Floyd rebellion, the group was involved in an encampment of houseless folks. And I'm just curious, you know, if you can talk about that and just that kind of interaction of this wider uprising that was happening around the country. And there was this encampment that was going on in the city. Talk about that.
Yeah, I'll start and I'll let Jen take over. Because it was actually more than, there wound up being more than one. But, yeah, one of our comrades with Philadelphia Housing Action at the time had been doing a lot of outreach to different encampments like earlier in the year, and like we were working together on the housing stuff, and him and his best friend, who's another one of our comrades, was like, after the George Floyd uprising, there was just like a tremendous, like, I mean, the uprising here was like pretty hardcore. Like there was a lot of like intense street fighting, and the cops definitely got like overwhelmed by people and like run out of certain places and like isolated and holed up in a few places. There's like a lot of looting, and then they called in the National Guard. And when the National Guard showed up, people, like, even though there's martial law, people were out there like blowing ATMs and stealing money and shit. But one of the side effects of the National Guard like moving in and occupying downtown was it displaced the homeless community from like where they would normally be camped out. And our comrades were like, yo, it's just time to like do this encampment. And like, they were like drawing on a little bit of history of like, the Occupy ICE encampment here, like was like pretty like deep in like with homeless folks, and like did a lot of interesting stuff. And like, they're kind of drawing on that legacy, and we're like interested in trying to like recreate something like that. And like, but have it be focused on houseless folks, and had been like talking to people about it already, and like they were having conversations after the uprising with people about like how they didn't have anywhere to be, and they were just sort of like, no, like it's time, we're gonna do this. So I'd say like the group was split a little bit on like whether or not to like start the encampment. Like I think, like I know I felt like a lot of reservations about it. I felt like we weren't really ready, and it was gonna take away from the housing actions, which I was like more interested in, because it was like a little less effort. Like you could kind of get people in a house and then just leave them alone, and they were fine and pretty self-sufficient. Whereas like the encampment was going to be like an everyday like grind. But ultimately like the encampment side like won the argument, because it was just like the timing was just like really right. And they were just like correct about that. Like it was going to get a lot of support. A lot of people were gonna be there, because it was like by that point, 10 days after the uprising, it had already sort of just become marches and that kind of stuff. And like, I think people were like really looking for something a little more like concrete, where they could like focalize and like take some space. And like our housing occupations weren't going to be that, because they were like secret. Like these moms and stuff that were occupying houses, like they weren't trying to be like all public and like draw a lot of attention or have their faces in the press or any of that. And like the city didn't even know we were doing that. So, they started it on June 10th, and it was just like 4 or 5 tents the first day. And then they kind of like weathered the first few hours of like police interaction, and like, I think like they just like stalled and kept like being like, well, we need to talk to so-and-so, and you need to talk to so-and-so. And it was like eventually got high enough up in the chain where like someone was like, you know, maybe we shouldn't evict like the black homeless people from the encampment, from the park, from the public park, like right now. Like it might really spark another riot or something. And so the city like hesitated, and then, you know, by the next day, it was like 30 or 40 tents. The day after that, it was like 80. And the day after that, it was over 100. So like by the weekend, it was just like almost 150 people. And at that point, it was already like a whole different scenario to try to like evict that. And it did like immediately draw a lot of support from a lot of different people. It was like we put out some demands around it, around like our campaign that we were doing with the houses, but also like it was a no cop zone, and we demanded like some other things that like people who were like, you know, advocating for homeless folks were like asking for, like tiny homes and that kind of shit, like that we weren't really that excited about, but like we were just like trying to throw stuff out there. We like explicitly were in solidarity with like the Black Radical Collective here in Philly that had a whole its own whole set of demands around like policing and police violence. Yeah, and then what, after 3 weeks or so, is that when the other camp started?
Yeah, the last Sunday in June.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I guess. But like the last Sunday in June, the housing authority had kind of refused to come to the table when the city came and did their fake talk with us that Friday. And so I moved like 13 residents up to the Philadelphia Housing Authority headquarters on this like big plot of land that was slated for a $52 million mixed-use development. And we moved late at night, so they kind of didn't realize we were there until the morning. We just kind of like all moved everybody up there and popped up tents, and they saw that we were there in the morning, and they sent me a cease and desist order that I did not have permission to enter or remain on undeveloped PHA property. And I knew they were gonna come because they sent me a cease and desist letter. But the next day, so that was like the Monday, so that Tuesday we got there and like around 8 a.m. a bunch of cops, like PHA cops, showed up and bulldozers, and they had like the Carpenters Union, and it turned into like a big circus, really. Like the union people were like digging holes and cementing, putting posts in like cement to put up a fence, and we were like pulling them out and throwing them at them, and then there was like bulldozers running at us and like cops, and the media ended up there, and people from the neighborhood ended up like joining in and forming a human chain. And I'm not sure what happened, but the managing director of the city was like with the reporter about something else, and he asked about the housing authority, and the managing director kind of like flipped out and ordered the housing authority to stand down, I guess, and then he ended up resigning like a week later. But we made it through that day, and the encampment got to stay. And because of their actions against us, we built our own like pallet, everything we could find on the ground, kind of barricade around the space, which ended up staying up through the whole occupation. And we were kind of just there, doing a lot of actions. We went to the CEO's house every day for 2 weeks and had dinner parties there, two separate times during the encampment. We went to a lot of the other housing execs' houses that lived close by, and, I don't know. I liked it there. I miss it. It was a pretty cool place.
So, like, we wound up having, like, these two encampments, and the one that was downtown was bigger by far, and it was also, like, in this really, like, upscale neighborhood. It's like where all the like art museums are and like the high end condos and the Whole Foods and that kind of stuff. And that was like at its peak, probably almost 200 people. And then the encampment at the PHA building was in the hood, and it was like a lot smaller, but it was also like probably a lot more active in like actually going out and doing actions and like mobilizing folks. But between them, like, we were like, you know, they were working together, and then we went public with the housing occupations. When was that?
We went public with the housing occupations before we started Camp Teddy.
Okay.
So we went public like about a week before we moved up to PHA.
So like at this point, like all this was going on, but like the city didn't even know about the housing occupations, and like, I don't know, I kind of thought the housing occupations were going to be a bigger deal, because they were just sort of, like, at the time, like, the biggest in the country. But, like, way more attention wound up happening, like, around the encampments, just because of, like, where they were and who they were agitating, and, like, that they were so visible. And, like, because of the context of George Floyd uprising, like, it was, like, kind of like the main, like, focal point for the movement that summer. Like, there was just, like, a lot of people who came into the movement, like, that's where they found each other. That's where they, like, built connections and relationships and, like, got involved in stuff. And, like, they weren't necessarily, like, working with us. In fact, probably a lot of times they were working against us. But, like, it still was that kind of, like, movement space. And we rode that out through 3 eviction waves. Like, the city ordered the encampments evicted 3 different times. And, like, every time we, like, defied the order and, like, mobilized a bunch of people. And we had a lot of people come out and support, like, more people every time. And it was across, like, a pretty, like, wide sector of the movement. Like, you had the Black Bloc there. You had, like, socialists there. You had, like, other activist types there. You had the Hood there. And every time they, like, ordered an eviction, like, we kind of escalated more. I think by the final eviction, like, the camp out on the parkway that was the big one, like, Camp JTD, they had, like, barricaded 22nd Street and, like, closed it off and, like, had it closed for almost a month. And, like, that barricade actually, we, like, found out later, was actually putting a lot of pressure on the city. They were, like, really upset about it and getting a lot of complaints from all the rich people around there. So, like, the encampments were, like, a very major part of the pressure that was happening on the city, at where, like, the houses were this whole kind of other thing, but were still part of the equation. Like, it was, like, proving that what we were talking about could be done. Like, the city was trying to deny that they had good houses, or that, like, they could be put into use, like, for a low budget or anything like that. But, like, we had these, like, 10 houses with, like, 50 people living in them that had, like, passed city and, like, worker inspections and stuff like that, that we could point to and just be like, no, like, we know, we've been in your houses, we have people in your houses.
Thank you.
you know, you go on to write, over the course of the summer, hundreds of people became engaged in the encampments and the campaign while our group grew smaller, some members breaking away and one dying tragically of an overdose. Sorry to hear about that. We ended the year having housed 150 to 200 people, occupying 30 homes, continuing to fight the city for what we were promised, and doing our best to weather the drama that comes after any uprising in mass movement activity inevitably tapers off and devolves into finger-pointing in competition among former allies. So let's talk about this, just kind of the highs and the lows, I guess.
I mean, it's the highs were just kind of, I mean, for me, since PHA is my arch enemy, just having this lit encampment at the Housing Authority headquarters where the CEO had to look at me out his little fifth floor balcony window and whatnot. But also just meeting people and getting, like, being able to, like, take people along and show people, like, how to really, channel their anger at their situation and being able to, like, educate people on, like, oh, like, PHA is $400 million annual operating budget, and the Office of Homeless Services has this, and this person's name, and that person's name. And I think, more recently, like, a lot of times, people have all their own stuff going on, and they obviously didn't have anywhere to go, and so people had, you know, a lot of different issues, and you don't think people were really paying attention. But, like, at the end of the large encampment, the CEO of the Housing Authority came down one day, and the managing director of the city, and people kind of just could tell they were important, but didn't know who they were. And when the CEO, like, introduced himself, people were like, oh, you're the Housing Authority guy, you're the CEO of the Housing Authority. And it was kind of like, oh, wow, like, people really have, they've been paying attention and learned a lot of things. And I think that was, like, a really important thing for me, because I've been homeless in Philly for 7 years, between 03 and 010. And I had, during those times, I'm, like, sleeping in front of City Hall, but I don't know who's the director of the Office of Homeless Services or who's ran the Housing Authority or who to be mad at, except the other people around me in the same situation. So I think it's for me, like, that was just a highlight, really showing people who to channel their anger towards and bringing people together to stand up for a thing and watching them, like, understand things. Or, like, more recently, like, the police entered one of our homes against our agreement, actually, this Friday, and the PHA police and I had to run them off, but it took me a few minutes to get to the house. But the residents that we put in there from the encampment really had taken in all the things that we had told them and were really, like, handled the police and were, like, given the law and the facts and kind of willing to stand up for themselves and being able to put people in housing and being able to block construction of a mixed income development and a $25 million parking garage, and just taking the Housing Authority particularly to the wall, to the point that they were, like, staging press conferences against me specifically and threatening me with the RICO Act. It was just kind of, that was, like, another high, just watching them be really stressed out. Like, the city and the Housing Authority was, like, so stressed out. It really didn't make any sense at all. And those are just the highs, like, the relationship building and really being able to educate people on, like, the real issues and, like, that they shouldn't be homeless and, like, that there's all these empty houses and that there's all these people making all this money on our backs. And I guess the lows were kind of, like, I mean, James, who was, like, a co-founder of the Philadelphia Housing Action in the encampment, like, overdosed early on, like, the first week of the encampment and died. So that was a real level because it was just, you know, getting started and we were working with him and that was our friend and, like, he died. So that was a low. I mean, there were a couple violent incidents, but I don't really look at that as lows. I mean, we're in Philly and, like, things are going to happen. And then there were just a lot of situations where a lot of people who came to be a part of the encampment kind of had really bad views around things, I guess, in my opinion, and kind of took on this, like, be a hero mentality and like started to try to recreate a lot of the institutions that we want to tear down and wanted to be needed and really wanted to be needed so bad that like some of these people would still to this day rather just have the residents still living outside at this encampment so they would have like a place to go and volunteer as they call it. And they did that language thing where like they just gave titles to all of us, like the organizers, the residents, the volunteers, and they, that got pretty low for me particularly because I ended up assaulting a volunteer and banning them from the PHA encampment. But when I did that, everything came together so much better when there weren't these people just trying to like build these institutions and create these codependencies and take people's autonomy. And then for me, that was, besides losing James, that was like the lowest low.
Yeah, I guess I'd echo like most of everything of what Jen said. And I'd say for me, like there was a lot of highs. Like I think for me, I probably like was able to like fulfill a lifelong fantasy of like opening like dozens of houses and like moving in homeless families. Like that was really fucking awesome. To be able to like pull that off and like not have anyone get arrested. And besides the first house that like melted down because of their own internal shit, like no one got evicted. And like that kind of only happened just cause like they just couldn't hack it with the neighbors. But, yeah, I think like seeing also like this kind of like movement spring up and like it was kind of the most I'd ever been on like the inside track of it where like I was like participating in like directly in like negotiations with the city, which is like usually something I would normally like frown upon and look down upon, but like was in this room with like comrades who were just like not compromising and were just like saying right to the mayor's face like, yeah, we're breaking the law, and if you want to lock us up, lock us the f-. And like we just did that for months on end, like never compromised until we got what we were demanding. And like at the end of the day, like even though some people think we could have gotten more, like pretty much the vast majority of the people that were at those camps like are spending this winter like inside somewhere. And they're not all in our houses, but like we got people into other places too, and are continuing to like work with people and like have like built like some really good relationships out of that, like moving forward. I think like as far as like low points, like for sure, like a lot of the like social dynamics around the camp, like were really challenging. I think for me, like as someone who like believes in horizontal organizing, like I just came up against so many limitations to that this summer when there's just like a dozen like really bad actors in the mix who are like lying manipulators who are trying to like undermine everything you're doing and turn people against you and like spread vicious rumors that could like get people up and or get people like thrown out of their house or whatever. Like I think that was like really challenging for me to like reconcile and like still try to like believe in the power of that kind of organizing. I think there was a lot of like real like gaps in like information because like we had to like move in a way where we couldn't just like share all the information with everyone all the time because there was like just a lot of random ass people who we didn't trust who were in the mix, and it was like pretty hard to have like open organizing happening. But despite all that, we still like managed to have like this like final decision to like disband the camps, like go through like a dozen assemblies and like multiple like canvassings of the camp, and like that played out over many weeks. And I think a lot of people like really kind of missed that part of it and like are like critical of us for being secretive and but like to me, at the end of the day, like the people I feel really accountable to are like the folks who didn't have housing, who were like sleeping out there, who were experiencing like chronic homelessness and were like mostly black and poor and like not so much like the other activist type people. And like, I kind of don't really care that they're mad about losing their encampment that they like to hang out at or whatever, because it just doesn't seem as important to me. And I think also like the other
part of it that people like seem to like not ever think about is like we had like all these families that were could maybe have like gotten drug out of their houses and lose their kids and shit. If we didn't like figure out how to land somewhere and get some kind of thing figured out by the end of it. I think also like at the end of the encampment, like things were like pretty fucked up. Like I don't want to like pretend like the encampment was like, especially the one on the parkway, like was like an idealized space. Like there was a lot of bad shit happening there all the time. Like there was sexual assault happening. There was violence happening. There was like all kinds of theft and all kinds of like bad shit happening there all the time. It's like a massive homeless encampment. And like, I don't feel like any of us or like any group of people were ever like in control of that place or anything like that. It was like, I think anyone that that thinks they can control a homeless encampment is a liar. The whole thing was just like very complicated, and there was a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of like fog of war going on where a lot of our allies like didn't really know what was going on and like kind of assumed the worst a lot of the time and still don't really know. So I guess like the low point for me, like coming out of that, is just feeling like I almost feel like I have like less people to rely on or in my network than when I started in some ways. I don't know. We still came out of it with like having one, like 65 houses and, like this moratorium on land sales and like protecting like squatters in general around it that squat in like housing authority properties and like, just really having put like the homeless services and the housing authority like on the back foot and like done a lot of like public relations damage to them where we can like really attack them and push them on like all the shit they do now. And they're kind of like in this position where they're kind of like, they're less like scared to piss us off. And like that feels kind of good. And I don't know how long that's going to last, but for now it's like nice. And like, we look forward to like doing more damage in the future and like just taking it to another level and like continuing on.
You're listening to It's Going Down, part of the Channel Zero Anarchist Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to support Autonomous Anti-Capitalist Media, go to itsgoingdown.org/shop and sign up to donate monthly, or give us a one-time donation to help us continue into 2021. Again, that's itsgoingdown.org/shop. And now, back to the show. You said that you were in talks with the city and they were aware of obviously what was going on. So, I mean, I'm assuming the police were obviously aware of what was going on. I'm just curious how that dynamic played out. Like, did the police mess with you while you were taking these houses, or were they kind of hands off, or was it a mix?
No, I would say like we had through the whole course of the thing, they found like four of our houses through the course of the whole thing. One of them, that first one that was like melting down because they couldn't be nice with the neighbors. And three other ones where they like showed up and tried to evict. And then Jen would like show up and run the cops out.
Bye, pigs.
There's like some pretty fun video of that you can find on the Occupy PHA Facebook history. But yeah, otherwise I would say like, no, like the cops were not that present. And like, other than at the encampment evictions when they were like threatening to try to like come in with the cops and clear us. But like ultimately I think like the political establishment was like worried that it would like spark another riot, and they had already like fucked up enough in their handling of the riot, and like they would see like how much support would show up. And like, I don't think like the police were like necessarily intimidated by any of that, but like the politicians were like, definitely like, fuck, this should not be happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much the same. I did get like 3 cease and desist orders, from the housing authority telling me that I did not have permission to enter or remain in their property, nor to move families that I see fit into their properties. And one time they even threatened me with the RICO Act, but no actual like physical, like run-ins with the police, except when they did find a couple of the houses, but they were pretty easy to get rid of.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, when it comes to the houses that were occupied, like, the housing authority here, like we were already talking about, has its own police force. And so that's who we would be dealing with. But, like, them showing up with cops to, like, kick out people who have established a residency is actually, like, illegal. So if you watch those videos of, like, Jan running them off, she's, like, calling the cops on the cops. And, like, the cops are getting nervous and, like, calling their supervisors and, like, saying, like, who's there, and they're being told to leave and that kind of stuff. So we were able to, like, utilize, like, an eviction defense network and, like, mobilize people, like, pretty rapidly, and then, like, faced with that kind of stuff and, like, the history of just what we were talking about before, like, all the stuff Jan's been through with the housing authority, like, all those cops know who she is and, like, what she represents. So they were, like, pretty quick to, like, de-escalate and leave when she would show up.
You know, one thing I'm interested in is, do you think, and you kind of already spoke to this, but without the wider rebellion and also the pandemic maybe even in the background, do you think that it would have played out the same in terms of the housing occupations?
Yeah, because, like, in a sense, because the housing authority does not keep up with this property, so they really don't even know where their vacant properties are, and then it would be, like, a period of time before they found people. And with the housing occupations, like, we didn't really get a lot of attention on those, especially locally. Like, the main focus was on, like, the encampments, but the city of Philadelphia and the housing authority like to just ignore problems so they don't get bad publicity. So I think without all of that, they probably would have just tried to keep it quiet and pretend like there were not even people occupying their houses, because that's basically what they did when we occupied PHA for 5 months last year. They just pretended like the thing didn't even exist.
Yeah, I guess I would say, like, I think Jen's right, but I think also, like, we probably wouldn't have, like, one, like, the transfer of their properties to, like, a community land trust that we're controlling necessarily out of that. Like, I think, yeah, like, they would have tried to downplay or minimize, and, like, would have just, like, been way more likely to stonewall without, like, the pressure of, like, all these different things going on, like, and the historical, like, context of, like, right after this big multiracial uprising around police violence and, like, all this kind of, like, national reckoning around racism and, like, everyone trying to take a knee and, like, pretend like they're not racist and prove they're not racist or whatever. So I think definitely, like, I think, like, everything I've been ever involved in when it comes to, like, these occupations or movements or, like, whatever, like, I think people sometimes get, like, a little too focused on, like, the tactic and miss a little bit, like, the importance of timing. And I think that this year, like, we would have done what we were doing anyways, but I think the timing made it just definitely, like, a lot bigger than it would have been otherwise, and ultimately we were able to, like, leverage that energy and that publicity and all that support into, like, a much bigger victory.
Well, in closing, do you want to talk about any big lessons?
Come on, Jen. You got any big lessons?
As far as, like, from the standpoint of, like, the actual occupations and housing takeovers and, like, the win or whatever, is kind of like, I think a real thing that we did that worked really well was kind of playing the city and the housing authority against each other. And I mean, that is still kind of like beneficial now. Like, we kind of like just really played them against each other by like using things like the city would say they don't have authority over the housing authority, and then we would like pull that up, and then we would kind of like got to a point where we got them all like talking about each other to us, and just kind of really played on each of their weaknesses and what they could and couldn't do, and kind of like really played them against each other. But it's the biggest lesson for me is like to not trust everybody and not like welcome everybody who like says they feel the same way as us, or was like a smiling, nice, kind face, because people come into these things and they don't have the right intentions, and they're like willing to bring everybody down for whatever their reasons are. So I think that was like the biggest lesson for me, because I'm an activist, but I became an activist through like circumstances and dealing with these issues. So I never like was in this like activist world. I'm just like in the neighborhood, and even with all of my actions against PHA over the past 5 years and the last occupation, it was more of like regular neighborhood people that I was like working with, and just people that were affected and angry and fed up. So I just learned a lot about like this world and infiltrators and how people like come into these things to tear them down from the inside. So I would definitely be more careful about like who I let into my circle next time, because there will be a next time.
I don't know. I learned a lot this year. I guess for me, one of the bigger like important lessons was just like getting a much better understanding on like all these institutions we're fighting are still just like, at the end of the day, like an amalgamation of these people's personalities, and like that you can kind of like figure them out and figure out what their weaknesses are and how to like play them against each other and use that strategically to like get what it is you want. I think also like it did really reaffirm like my faith in like just like really militant direct action, like without and not compromising and like being the best way forward. And it's like, you know, I think like over the course of that whole campaign, I think we had like maybe 4 or 5 meetings the whole time, and I'm pretty like excited about that. I think I spent a lot of time in my life sitting in meetings that never went anywhere and like trying to figure out how to make things perfect. And, this was definitely not that. And we just did it, and it was definitely not perfect. It was definitely rough around the edges, but, it had the momentum, and it like got over the finish line. So to me, those are like kind of the biggest like affirmations I pull out of it. And, yeah, all the stuff Jen said about like trust and being disappointed in like movement people and stuff like that was like very present there for me too. Like, I guess it's going to take me a little while to like rebuild that. I saw a lot of like bad stuff, and it's still like playing out. There's still people like actively trying to like undermine what we did or what we're doing, or like hostile to us and trying to like interfere with movement work that like really shouldn't be about like whether or not you like us or who we are, and should be more focused on like who the common enemy is, and how do we just like, I'll work over here and you work over there, and we're like try to like, you know, have it add up to like winning some fighting the enemy. So,
well, just in closing, where are things at now, and anything else you want to add?
Well, now I am the CEO of the Housing Authority. Now we're just really kind of working on getting the land trust set up and going back and forth with the city and the Housing Authority about like which properties they're trying to give us, and making sure that we get properties that people will be able to live in a, you know, timely manner, and dealing with the houses that we occupied and getting those ones transferred over so that they don't have to be like considered as squatters anymore, and still fighting the Housing Authority, selling the property. Like, we recently discovered that they sold a bunch of properties to like Temple University after the agreement, but they're like claiming that they listed them with a broker before the agreement, and the sales just went through. So like, there's still a lot more fighting left to do. That's kind of where we are.
Yeah, like the fighting that we're doing now is a lot more like not in the street and just sort of like over the phone and email and stuff. But it's still like, we're still like really active, like
messing with the city and like doing outreach to like folks on the ground and that kind of stuff. I think trying to like actually get these properties transferred and like get people in them and all that kind of stuff is going to take up a lot of our time for a little while, but we're kind of like encourageable and like continue, like even though we have to like meet with the city or the housing authority to like talk about that stuff, we're still like actively messing with them and protesting them and like making their lives difficult, showing up at their houses and like almost getting their marriages ended and this kind of stuff. So, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, this is still just like really early. Like we've only kind of got started, and we think also like, there's a lot coming down the pike when it comes to housing. Like you have this eviction wave coming with like where renters are looking at like being evicted en masse as soon as this moratorium lifts or however that's going to play out, or get like the can's going to get kicked down the road. Eventually that's going to come to a head, and we'll see if, these Democrats are going to like really play hero or not. But, I suspect that people are going to still have to deal with that. And it's going to be like the usual suspects who get hit the hardest. Most places are dealing with like a surge in homelessness. With the pandemic's going to kick around at least for the next year. And like a lot of the like ways that places have dealt with homelessness in the past are like not really viable options anymore. Like you can't shove a bunch of people into a room in bunk beds and like, and have that work as like a public health thing. And then like, because of the pandemic, the economy is also just kind of like crumbling. So I can just see like this issue is going to become like a lot more magnified. And there's a lot of people all around the country, like fighting that fight in different fronts and like trying to get the movements like rolling now. And I think that's really strategic. And like, I think that the more people can like engage with that stuff and like, and get ahead of the curve and help set the tone and the politics and push, the more I think that struggle can be a vehicle for like real transformative change. And like actually have a big impact towards like making the kind of changes that are going to actually like get people out of poverty in larger numbers and stuff. So, we just hope like by like our crazy year and all the people that participated in it that we can kind of help like in some small way like set a tone or like inspire people to do stuff. And like we've been in touch with a bunch of people around the country who are like taking pretty like radical actions and really trying to get stuff going in their communities. And like if you're out there listening to this stuff, like we're happy to talk to you if you're interested in doing things like that. And like we want to support people and like help get the word out about what they're doing and that kind of stuff. So hit us up. We're a Philadelphia Housing Action. PhiladelphiaHousingAction.info is our website. PhiladelphiaHousingAction@ProtonMail.com is our email.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.